It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. Several laws approved by Republican lawmakers last year during a lame duck session and which were subsequently struck down by a lower court have been reinstated by the state Supreme Court. We check in with a political reporter to understand what is and isn't in effect and look at other lawsuits. How are you feeling about all this legal back and forth about the lame duck session laws? Do you worry that all the legal maneuvering is getting in the way of actual governance? What questions do you have? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Patrick Marley covers state government and politics for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Patrick, thanks for joining us this morning.
Yeah, good morning.
Which laws does this pair of Supreme Court rulings reinstate?
The practical effect of it is that it puts virtually every lame duck law back into effect. There's a provision on early voting that was struck down by a federal judge, so that's not in effect. And there's a portion of the law that covers so-called guidance documents that the Supreme Court continued to put on hold. The most significant thing that the Supreme Court did the other day was put back into effect the requirement that the Attorney General go to the legislature's budget committee or committees of the legislature to get sign off on any court settlement.
The court didn't actually rule on the main questions here. They basically just set aside what the lower court had done with the by invalidating these laws for the time being. So what changes could we still see in the coming months?
Yeah, this case is still in a fairly early stage. The Dane County judge that first ruled on the case did so in a preliminary fashion. So he essentially put certain provisions of the lame duck laws on hold while he considered the case. He was to conduct a trial on one part of the law on Wednesday. The Supreme Court ruled just 15 hours before that and removed his earlier order, most of his earlier order, and now it's considering just that preliminary part of the case. From there, the Supreme Court could rule ultimately on whether these laws do violate the separation of powers or not, or kick it back to the Dane County judge. So, you know, and you got to remember, this is one of four cases that are have been filed over the lame duck laws. So,
well, let's talk about some of those other cases then. What other lawsuits are there, and what are they contending?
So one of the other lawsuits was brought by the League of Women Voters and some other groups, and it contends that the entire session that was held to pass the lame duck laws was invalid. Effectively, they're arguing that lawmakers brought themselves into session illegally, and therefore everything they did should be struck down. That case has been argued before the Supreme Court. The conservatives who are on the majority were extremely skeptical of that argument. And that case should be resolved in the next few weeks, probably by the end of June. And then there's the union case we were just talking about that they just ruled on recently. A federal court has essentially finished with this issue of the early voting and found the lame duck laws included provisions that would have limited early voting. It was very similar to an earlier law they had passed that had been struck down by a federal court. The same federal judge reviewed that and said, no, this is too much like your old law, struck it down. And then the last case is also in federal court, and that's at a very early stage. It was brought by the state Democratic Party, and it alleges that the lame duck laws violate the First Amendment rights of Democratic voters.
Patrick Marley covers state government and politics for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. The news coming from the Wisconsin Supreme Court, good for Republicans. How did they respond?
They were very pleased with this. The Senate Majority Leader, Scott Fitzgerald, said he sees this as a sign that they're going to put put the laws back in place, and that what Republicans intended will be the law of the land.
We had a caller who couldn't stay with us. Jeremy suggested if bills or asked if bills go through some sort of a screening process from the judicial branch. Jeremy thinks that would save some time and money, given how much is happening with these laws in court now.
Well, I think to get a system like that in place, you'd need to change the state constitution, most likely. The Supreme Court has said that it can rule on laws, but it can't rule on bills. So, okay. You know, you could introduce a bill that says we're not going to apply the First and Second Amendments in the state of Wisconsin, something that clearly would never withstand a court challenge. But the courts have said they can't even review that until it has been enacted into law. So you've got to have the legislature act, the governor sign it, and only then can the courts rule on what's been put in place.
One of the laws that was restored that you pointed out is it makes it more difficult for Democratic Attorney General Josh Call to settle federal lawsuits. How did Attorney General Call respond to that ruling?
He just put out a very brief statement saying that he believes this is clearly unconstitutional and that he'll prevail in the end. You know, this really does change the system that you have for the attorney general. Usually in the past, the attorney general has been able to determine how litigation is conducted. The governor or the legislature has a role in when cases are initiated, but how they're dealt with, how the state is defended when it's sued, is determined by the attorney general. Now, the attorney general would have to go to lawmakers to get permission before ending a lawsuit or settling a lawsuit. And that's, you know, I think geared at things like the Obamacare lawsuit that Wisconsin was part of. Republicans wanted to stay in it. Call wanted to get out of it. That's the kind of case that's in mind. But it also extends to many other, you know, the state is involved in all kinds of litigation all the time. And so now Call, for instance, if an inmate sues the state and has a plausible claim that they were mistreated in prison, now that's going to have to go to a legislative committee before they settle it to determine, do they pay this inmate money? Do they not? How much money do they give that person?
So what about changes that have been made in recent weeks while the laws were in abeyance? Does that mean that those changes would be invalid?
So I mentioned the Obamacare lawsuit. That's one provision they put in would have kept Call from getting out of that lawsuit. Then when there were the early decisions over the lame duck laws that struck down that provision or put it on hold anyway, Call then went to court to get Wisconsin out of the federal lawsuit over Obamacare and successfully did so. The state Supreme Court in its order the other day said that's water under the bridge now, that it's not going to try to get the state back into the Obamacare lawsuit. It didn't mention that specific lawsuit, but cases like that said it wouldn't try to put the state back into those cases.
Patrick, thank you so much for joining us this morning. I really appreciate your time.
You bet.
Patrick Marley covers state government and politics for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He is also the co-author of the book, More Than They Bargained For, Scott Walker, Unions, and the Fight for Wisconsin. Coming up next, about one in every five drug cases at the state crime lab involved meth last year. That's more than heroin and fentanyl combined. An emergency room doctor and a drug investigator join us to discuss the toll meth is taking in Wisconsin. I'm John Munson, in for Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson, in for Kate Archer Kent. Methamphetamine, or meth, has become a growing concern across Wisconsin. Last year, about one in every five drug cases in the state or at the state crime lab involved meth, more than heroin and fentanyl combined. An emergency room doctor and a drug investigator will join us this morning to talk about meth and the toll it's taking. What questions do you have about methamphetamine in Wisconsin? What do you want to know about the drug's effects or treatment options? Maybe you've taken methamphetamine and sought treatment. What do you remember about your experiences, and what would you tell other people who are trying to get help? How's methamphetamine affected your life, your family, your community? Are you struggling with addiction and seeking help, trying to help a family member or friend? Share your stories with us at 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Our guests are Dr. Chris Eberline, an emergency room physician with Gunderson Health. Chris, good morning.
Good morning.
And Tom Johnson, an investigative coordinator with the La Crosse County Sheriff's Department. Tom, good morning.
Good morning.
Both are former members of a local drug task force, and they join us from Wisconsin Public Radio's La Crosse studios. Tom, let's start with you. To some of our listeners, methamphetamine might sound like a broken record. Parts of Wisconsin saw growing problems with meth in the 90s, and then the headlines kind of went away. Is meth just making a comeback, or is there something different this time around? Or maybe it's always been here and we just haven't been paying close enough attention?
Well, I think in the 90s, one of the biggest things that was a main factor there was the manufacturing of meth was a little more localized. We had a lot of mom-and-pop garage-type labs and so forth. And then as time transpired, they started experiencing more super lab meth, which was coming out of Mexico and in the west coast area of the United States. And so we've kind of morphed into the ability to get our meth from the cartels in Mexico in terms of the super lab a lot easier than we did at that time.
So why has meth become popular again, Tom?
Well, it's an economic thing, basically. It's being run by the cartels. As I said earlier, the cartels in Mexico are running super labs. They can create it and manufacture the meth much cheaper and a much higher quality with ephedrine in that area. And they smuggle it across the border into strategic places throughout the United States and then distribute it to these areas. And they basically force feed some of the larger dealers that we've talked to in this area.
Statewide, at least, it seems like opioids are getting a lot more attention than meth. Tom, why is that?
Well, I think one of the biggest factors with meth and with heroin and opioids is the fact that it causes such havoc and respiratory failure, and death is more immediate than it is in a meth situation. I think that's obviously gotten a lot of people's attention.
Is there any link between the rise in opioid use and the rise in meth?
Well, I think what we're seeing is a cyclical area where meth is taking over. I think things like the Alliance to Heal and these heroin and other illicit drug task force situations that we created, especially in the La Crosse and the Cooley region area, is we've educated people as to the dangers of heroin, and people are seeing their friends die, and they've actually made a choice to transition to meth in a lot of cases.
Tom Johnson is the investigative coordinator for the West Central Metropolitan Enforcement Group, which investigates drug crime in western Wisconsin. Dr. Chris Eberline is an emergency room physician with Gunderson Health. He's also a member of Alliance to Heal, a new heroin task force. Dr. Eberline, how does methamphetamine affect the brain or the body as a stimulant?
Methamphetamine, it really devastates the entire body. There isn't an organ system it doesn't affect. You get this incredible high, and then you end up having, rapid heart rate, high blood pressure, elevated temperature, respirations go up, and that's just your short term. Long term, the complications with meth, I refer to it as a slow death. With opiates, you get, like Tom alluded to, there's that, the overdose and the death is oftentimes within minutes to 10 minutes or so, whereas with meth, it's that the organ systems just slowly shut down one after another. And you do get the occasional rapid death from either a hemorrhagic stroke because of the high blood pressure or heart attack or arrhythmia, but typically it's these body systems slowly get beat up long enough that you end up having these long-term complications that lead to death.
Dr. Eberline, are there actually any medical uses for this drug?
For actual methamphetamine, no. You know, it is related to amphetamines that are used medically, chemically similar, but it's not. Methamphetamine itself doesn't have a medical use.
And Dr. Eberlein, when meth users come into an emergency room, what kind of health problems are you seeing because of the drug?
The biggest one that we see, and oftentimes the hardest to treat, are the psychological issues that people get with meth use and long-term meth use. They can become psychotic, hallucinate, and cause long-term cognitive problems, and those are extremely difficult to treat.
Let's take a phone call. Tom in Burlington is with us. Tom, welcome to the morning show.
I studied economics at Georgetown University. As long as marijuana is more expensive than these other drugs, people are going to go with these other drugs. And a friend of ours, his name is Peter Lewis, started a company called Progressive Insurance. He had his leg cut off, and the only drug that he could use that would solve the pain without the phantom pains without the side effects was marijuana. And he went around the country to decriminalize marijuana for that reason. He spent $20 million. So I just want to throw that in the conversation.
Tom, thanks for that. I understand that when you called, you said you had lost friends to meth in your community. What was that like?
When you have a little 10-year-old kid, they go to these things, they call it a celebration of life. So they're playing rock and roll music here, and this little kid says, yeah, we're here because my father died. It's heartbreaking. It's absolutely, and we have got to stop. We've got to face this problem. Robin Voss's district here, and they have to turn this thing around, and they've got 12, 15 states in the United States who have dealt with the marijuana thing and legalized or decriminalized it. We've got to do something.
All right, Tom, thanks for your point. Want to hear from other people who have experience with meth in their communities. How has it affected you? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Dr. Eberlein, Wisconsin and the country have been talking for years about growing opiate overdoses. We talked a little bit about about some of the differences in health risks. Opiates can kill you quicker. Meth takes a little longer. What other differences do we note between these two things?
Well, the drugs are almost polar opposites on their effects, immediate effects on the body, whereas the opiates are a CNS depressant. You have methamphetamines are a very strong stimulant with a massive dopamine release causing all those symptoms that I talked about. Long-term, you get the weight loss, addiction, dental decay, anxiety, changes in brain structure, insomnia, paranoia, and hallucinations. And you can also get kidney and heart problems too. So it really does affect the entire body. And whereas the opiates, you get the strong cravings and the short-term high that causes respiratory depression and the sedative component of it. So what you'll find that I've seen is some of these patients will try to basically negate one or the other, basically chemically try to put themselves back to neutral. So they're using their opiates, they get tired, they use a stimulant, and then they just keep in this vicious cycle.
Yeah, it really does kind of feed itself. Tom, I want to go back to you for just a moment here. What are some of the big challenges in trying to police the meth problem in Wisconsin from an investigator standpoint?
Well, I think one of the driving forces, obviously, is this massive addiction. And Dr. Eberlein alluded to the fact that meth does make a stimulation of the dopamine receptors in the brain. And it becomes almost an involuntary need. The brain becomes rewired, so to speak. But it's not just that. It's a variety of things that feed into this. I mentioned earlier that there's an economic factor. The issue is that the cartels and the people that are driving this business are literally pushing large and large quantities on dealers. Anecdotally, when I've talked to people in the jails and people we've arrested, they talk about ordering up a certain amount of drugs and actually having the dealers deliver twice that amount, and it's basically life-threatening if they don't get rid of that drug. So it's economic-driven, and it's addiction-driven, and it's just a massive rewiring in the brain that causes that addiction that drives their need for meth.
So is are the mass quantities of meth arriving in Wisconsin, does that mean that the drug is cheaper than alternatives?
It is very cheap. We're getting the Minneapolis, St. Paul, Twin City area generally is a source area for us. A lot of the drugs are smuggled via multi-carriers and systems from the Mexican border up to the Twin Cities, and then it's delivered here. We sit in kind of a unique situation because of our location. We're only 3 hours from the Twin Cities and about 4 hours from Chicago. So we're in a situation where we can easily obtain those drugs.
Up next, the news. Then we continue our conversation about Wisconsin's growing methamphetamine problem. Tom Johnson is investigative coordinator for the West Central Metropolitan Enforcement Group, investigating drug crime in western Wisconsin. Dr. Chris Eberlein is an emergency room physician with Gunderson Health. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. This is the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. While opioid problems are capturing headlines, Wisconsin's problem with methamphetamine is once again on the rise. Are you seeing this in your community? Do you have friends or relatives struggling with meth addiction? Have you been treated for meth addiction? Share your stories. Bring your questions. 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Ideas@WPR.org is the email address. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. Tom Johnson is the investigative coordinator for the West Central Metropolitan Enforcement Group, which investigates drug crime in western Wisconsin. Dr. Chris Eberlein is an emergency room physician with Gunderson Health. They join us from our regional studios in La Crosse this morning. Before we continue, I want to read something. One of our callers, Doug, who couldn't stay with us, but he wanted to share his story. Doug says that he has tried meth with friends and professional acquaintances and had to give up his career and move away from the area he lived in order to break free of the usage 7 years ago. He says it's possible to stop using, and his addiction wasn't stronger than his family. Tom, Dr. Eberlein, how common is Doug's story?
I think it's very common. You really have to break those social cycles that continue to repetitively expose you to that drug if you're going to stay sober. And there are treatments. I mean, there is not a medication that they can treat it with like we have for opioids. However, they do have success with cognitive behavioral therapies, and and changing your social situation is a key component of that.
Doug, thanks for sharing your story with us. You could join us at 800-642-1234 with your question or comment this hour as we talk about Wisconsin's meth problem. Tom, how much of a growing problem is meth compared to other illegal drugs in western Wisconsin?
I would say that about 70% of law enforcement in the area all agree that meth is the largest and most problematic drug that we see. There's just a variety of drugs that are out there, and we deal with them off and on, but methamphetamine has simply skyrocketed over the past few years.
And is it spreading then to other parts of the state as well?
It seems so. There's oftentimes when the eastern part of the state and us on the western side have some differences in terms of the influx of heroin and meth and so forth, and the areas nearest Chicago, the southeast part, are often have different tendencies than we do. But meth seems to have permeated the entire state of Wisconsin from what we can tell.
And is meth associated, or how is meth associated with other crimes? And is this taking police resources away from investigating other crimes?
It's a massive reason for property crimes. It drives the property crimes. These habits for these people, they're spending easily $100 to $300 to $400 or more a day on their habit. That money has to come from somewhere because they get to the point where they're really non-functional. So they're out there stealing things from properties, literally taking wiring out of houses to scrap at scrap yards and so forth. So it drives a lot of the general property crimes for sure.
Dr. Eberlein, you were on the Ideas Network last year to talk about rising problems with meth. Are you seeing changes in the past year? Are things getting better, getting worse? What are you seeing?
Well, I think we do have a little bit of a shift. We've just been reviewing some of our local overdose deaths in La Crosse County, and we've seen prescription drugs drop dramatically and opiates in general drop, but methamphetamines have either stayed the same or have steadily increased in the toxicology of these overdoses. And in the emergency department, kind of the same picture. We've seen a lot of meth complications. Oftentimes they don't come in directly for meth use, like they sometimes more often do with opiate use, though usually where we catch them is when they come in a psychotic episode or hallucinating and they're brought in by police.
Last year, the State Department of Justice tried raising awareness about meth, and the agency dedicated more resources to drug enforcement. Tom, are you seeing any results from this push, good or bad?
Well, sometimes that's hard to gauge. There's oftentimes I wake up in the morning and my head is just spinning. I'm thinking the whole world is on meth. So it kind of, as I said earlier, it's a little cyclical. It's up and down. But the bottom line is meth just keeps rising. Heroin ebbs and flows, and meth just keeps on accelerating. So it's hard to say that there's been a big difference just because it's so prolific in the area.
Tom Johnson is the investigative coordinator for the West Central Metropolitan Enforcement Group, which investigates drug crime in western Wisconsin. Dr. Chris Eberlein is an emergency room physician with Gunderson Health and a former member of the La Crosse County Heroin Task Force. Let's take a call from Mike, who joins us from Caledonia, Minnesota. Mike, good morning. Welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm calling from Caledonia, Minnesota. I know both Tom and Chris Eberlein quite well. I guess I didn't have anything particular to share. I was just listening to your program this morning and heard some things. And my wife and I, my family, my son, we've gone through 4 years watching an absolute destructive cycle happen to our 22-year-old son, who's been addicted to meth for, like I said, 4 years. We know more about meth use than we'd ever want to know, and watched a young man struggle through the criminal system, the justice system, through multiple treatments, getting sober, doing very well for, you know, months at a time, and then something triggers it and back to it. And to the point now where he's serving a prison sentence, which has been hard for us to watch happen, but we've watched the destructive effects for 4 years now take over his life. And I heard the conversation this morning on Wisconsin Public Radio, and I felt from my perspective, if there's anything I can share with anybody, I would love to share.
All right, Mike, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. Dr. Eberlein, how common is Mike's story?
Unfortunately, it's all too common. And, if you knew Mike on a personal level like I do, you would realize that this is not something that it would surprise you how good families can have these patients come out and end up addicted. And a lot of people, they have that stigma that, that if you do everything right, your child won't end up on drugs, and that's not always the case. So people have to realize this really does go through all of our community and hit really every socioeconomic status in our communities.
Tom, you have talked about how the meth coming to Wisconsin is being produced elsewhere and coming in from the outside of the state. How are our state and law enforcement agencies working with other states to try to maybe stop this flow of meth across state borders?
Well, there's constant collaboration. We deal on a day-to-day basis with both state, federal, and local law enforcement agencies throughout the United States. I've personally traveled to the Denver area in an attempt to intercept certain shipments and things like that. And it's always, we're welcome with open arms, and we do the same for other agencies. But everybody is working as a collaborative effort to try and curtail the influx of this poison into our communities.
Dr. Arbeline, you just in responding to Tom's call just a moment ago about his situation, that there isn't really this can happen in what we would call really good families. And is there some sort of a pattern to patients who use meth of any kind? Are there health histories that place people at a higher risk for addiction?
No, not really. That's the one of the things we struggle with, is trying to pick out who's at higher risk. You know, they've been talking about, we know there are some things that we are higher risk, like adverse childhood events for opiate addiction. And so there are some things that can happen in your life that will make you more likely to become addicted. But as a general scope, it's very difficult to pick out who's going to be at higher risk or not.
Tom, how does law enforcement recognize whether someone might be under the influence of methamphetamine? What are the symptoms?
Well, with meth, it's oftentimes when you've had some experience dealing with these people, it's pretty apparent. There's basically four stages of meth use. They go through what we call a rush, then they go into a high, and then they crash, and then they do what we call tweaking. So we've become very familiar with those stages. And they have behaviors that are consistent with those stages. So we're able to tell the physical factors. Dr. Arbeline referred to the dental situations. We call that meth mouth, where the enamel is just simply eaten away. The facial features are narrow and sunken cheeks. They have scabbing and sores and so forth. So meth users are like a signboard. They stand out in the crowd, so to speak.
How does meth affect a person's ability to drive, and can we test for impairment like blood alcohol?
We can. It's a more complicated process. It's not like the PBT, where a person can blow in a PBT machine on the side of the road. So it takes, you know, blood testing and toxicology and so forth. So it's a little more complicated. Their ability to drive is just like any other thing in their lifestyle. It just becomes adversely affected by the meth. They become psychotic and unable to focus, and they're really an unsafe situation out there.
And what are the criminal penalties for using or selling meth?
Well, all meth violations are felonies, whether it's possession or possession with intent to deliver or deliveries. They're just different classification of felonies.
We're talking about Wisconsin's problem with methamphetamine with Tom Johnson, investigative coordinator for the West Central Metropolitan Enforcement Group, and Dr. Chris Arbeline, emergency room physician with Gunderson Help. And we invite you to join our conversation about methamphetamine. Do you have a story to tell about you or your family? What's the situation in your community? How do you see it affecting things where you live? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. I'm John Munson, in for Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson, in for Kate Archer Kent. We're talking about Wisconsin's growing problem with methamphetamine and wondering what you think about it. Are you seeing this in your community? If you work in law enforcement, what's the meth problem look like where you live? If you have had or are having an issue with meth addiction, are you able to get the treatment you need? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. Tom Johnson is investigative coordinator for the West Central Metropolitan Enforcement Group. Dr. Chris Arbeline is an emergency room physician with Gunderson Health. They're with us from our La Crosse studios. Let's go to the phones. Melody is in Ferryville and joins us. Melody, welcome to the morning show.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Okay, well, I had an unfortunate experience. My daughter was on methamphetamine in addition to heroin for about 5 years in Milwaukee. Some people said that I enabled her. I kept a roof over her head and food. My belief is that you can't let heroin addicts fall. They die. My concern with throughout the whole process is she did not have insurance. One facility in Milwaukee keeps you for 3 days. It's co-ed. There's sexual assaults happening there. I did dig up the money that I, whatever I could, I begged I begged, borrowed from everybody I could and put her into a facility in La Crosse, which cost, I believe, approximately $4,000. I'm happy to report that my daughter has been clean for 7 years. As with your previous caller, she had to physically remove herself from Milwaukee and now lives in Green Bay. But the concern arises that there's just no treatment facilities. Even with insurance, the beds are not available. So I'm just wondering, healthcare has got to be a big, big part of this. Mental health has to be a big, big part of it. Why are our children, why are our kids, why are our people needing to have an alternative to reality, which I think the use of drugs is for? So,
all right, Melody, thanks. Thank you for sharing your story with us. Dr. Eberlein, what about treatment options and the cost? How available is treatment for meth addiction to the average citizen who may or may not have health insurance?
She brings up a lot of good points. And first of all, congratulations to her daughter for being sober and getting through it. It's not an easy thing. And her perseverance in getting her treatment, it is it's a story that we hear very frequently, that treatment is difficult to obtain, it's expensive, and oftentimes they need more than one round of treatment to get through this. And it's something that we're working on locally currently, trying to figure out where our gaps are in treatment and how to get people into treatment quickly, because that's the other thing that we find is that you can get people in sometimes, but it's a 3-week wait list. Well, in 3 weeks, they may not want to go through treatment at that point. So you really have to get them in when they're ready and want to, and you can't delay this process. So that's a whole other issue as far as rapid treatment goes. And payment is always an issue. A lot of the insurance covers don't cover inpatient treatment, and when they do, it's shorter time than some patients need. So it's definitely a gap in our society, in our state, as far as treatment goes.
Melody, thanks for that call. You can join us at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Let's go to Rich next in Rhinelander. Rich, good morning. Thanks for joining us on the morning show.
Good morning. I'm interested in the motivations that the medical and law enforcement community find in the meth population. I understand people get hooked on opioids because they frequently begin with trying to quell or diminish body pain. But with meth, there's an increase in energy. And I'm wondering, is there some connection to the need to work multiple jobs or do manual labor? Or are there studies being done on what kind of populations are drawn to this particular drug?
Dr. Eberlein, what do we know about why people start using meth in the first place?
We don't have the connections that we do with opiates. That's a very good point. And oftentimes it's very different reasons why patients are initiating that drug. So we don't have good answers for his question, and it is something that we've been looking at. But is there a common thread like opiates? No.
And Tom, how, from your perspective, the people that you deal with who are using meth, the people law enforcement encounters, what are their stories about how they got started with this? Is there any kind of common denominator at all?
Well, I talk to lots and lots of people that are incarcerated or that have rehabilitated themselves and want to assist law enforcement in working investigations. And I often talk about that. You know, we can debate gateway drugs and so forth, but there just seems to be a transition. They start with alcohol, marijuana, and then get into things like cocaine or ecstasy, Molly, things like that. And it just eventually leads to an experimentation situation where they get into methamphetamine and or heroin. So there's no real guideline. There's no real track record. I oftentimes talk to these people, and I find that there seems to be a breakdown in the family dynamic. That's oftentimes what causes their tendency to drift towards drug involvement. And that's kind of a sad commentary.
We had a caller, Alyssa, who couldn't stay with us, who called in to share her story. She says her husband, her ex-husband, relapsed 2 years ago after being sober for 14 years. He eventually started using meth, and he's sober again, but this ended their marriage. Dr. Eberlein, what about recidivism long-term for meth users? How common is it for people to go back to using the drug again?
It's all too common, and just like any other addiction, you know, it's a long-term chronic disease, and it has to be treated as such. You know, the other component of this that we often don't touch on enough is, you know, majority of these patients have underlying mental health problems, and that's one reason they're using these substances as well. So you have to treat the whole patient, and mental health is a huge component in opiate and meth addiction.
Tom, what would be helpful for law enforcement, including any changes to state or federal law, to combat the meth problem you're seeing in western Wisconsin?
Well, from a law enforcement standpoint, we, again, work towards collaboration. There's no single fix to this thing. We can't arrest away the problem, as has been often said. We can't counsel away the problem, but working together is the key piece. So funding, 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 it's all about the dollars. The more dollars we can get into the system to create monies for additional investigative hours and things like that, along with those, the ability to get those beds for immediate treatment. Our biggest problem is the officer on the street dealing with a meth addict or someone in crisis. That officer needs a place to put that person. They need a solution now rather than down the road after a fight with the insurance company.
Dr. Eberlein, when you consider the scope of this problem, is there anything here that gives you hope?
Well, yeah, I think we've seen a lot of good success on the opiate front. And one of the things when we started to address the opiate front, a lot of the grants are for opiates, but we quickly realized if we're successful in that venue, we can transition to some of these other drugs pretty easily. If you have a very robust health system that for treatment and support for addiction afterwards, that will work for any of these addictive substances. So as we build that up and get more evidence-based treatments on that front, we'll see more successes on others.
And Tom, what about you from the law enforcement perspective? Do you see, is there a ray of sunshine? Is there any kind of light at the end of the tunnel in terms of stopping the tide of meth flowing into Wisconsin?
Well, it's a tough one. There's days when it seems like it's endless, and then there's other days when it seems like you're making progress. The most enlightening days are those ones where people that you've arrested in the past and have dealt with and seen go through court come back to you. I just had a young lady call me the other day. She calls me regularly now and touts the situation that she's been free and clear and sober, and she's actually doing presentations. So those are the things that make you work on and think there is hope.
Tom Johnson, Chris Eberlein, thank you for joining us this morning. I really appreciate your time.
You bet.
My pleasure.
Tom Johnson is investigative coordinator for the West Central Metropolitan Enforcement Group. Dr. Chris Eberlein is an emergency room physician with Gunderson Health. They joined us this morning from WPR's La Crosse studios. Just ahead, we learn what makes cats such unique pets and that it is possible to train them. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network.